This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, August 21st. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited. I can't wait for my little sister to grow up in this school and just, she's really lucky.
We'll join the 56 students on their first day in the brand new Tenalian School in Port Allsworth. Speaking of Port Allsworth, did you know that hundreds of wounded veterans and their spouses have been spending time at a lodge retreat there for the past four summers?
I believe it's the only one of its kind in the United States that is a marriage retreat, you know, that's for wounded veterans. So it's great.
A hotel lodge in King Salmon is succeeding in carving out a new niche in the summer tourism industry in the Bay. In Dillingham, we noticed a handful of volunteers get together and get something done this week.
You know, I wanted to do something to help improve the animal shelter, and this was a project we could take on with volunteers and donations and make an improvement here.
Those stories plus a conversation with Representative Bryce Edgman coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Heavy rains triggered a landslide in Sitka Tuesday morning, apparently killing three men who were in a home that was totally destroyed. The bodies of two of the men have so far been found. One other is still missing. The Alaska Permanent Fund released a financial statement this week showing the total value of the fund had climbed to $52.8 billion. The fund's investments earned a better-than-expected 4.9% for the fiscal year ending June 30th. The marine vessel Challenger and its barge are still sitting intact where they sank in the Nooshkak River August 9th. The Challenger was believed to have about 100 gallons of diesel on board at the time it went down. DEC's Mark Seeloff says contractors recovered some of that last Sunday.
They were able to get 30 gallons of diesel from the tank of the motor vessel Challenger, so that means they got about a little less than 70 gallons of fuel on board. There's no more additional sheening, just more residual sheening to no sheening at all coming from the vessel. Every time they go out there, most of the pictures, I don't see anything. So it's been really good as far as that goes.
Ridge Contracting, the responsible party, has hired Vitus Marine to salvage the vessels. The plan submitted by Vitus is awaiting approval by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The Pebble Limited Partnership is asking for a former EPA official to be subpoenaed as part of the lawsuit of alleged agency violations of federal law. In a motion filed August 17th, lawyers for Pebble asked the federal court to subpoena Philip North, who is believed to now reside in Australia. North, who was formerly assigned in Alaska, is believed to have played a major role in getting the agency involved in a process that led to the preemptive mine restrictions through the Clean Water Act. Despite reporting in the Alaska Dispatch this week, stakeholders in Dillingham say the White House is still signaling that President Barack Obama will make a visit to town the morning of September 2nd, a Wednesday. Mr. Obama says he will tour the state to raise awareness about climate change and is expected to travel to Kotzebue as well. Scientists say they still don't know what killed some 30 whales that have stranded along the Gulf of Alaska and the Alaska Peninsula since the spring. This week, NOAA declared the deaths an unusual mortality event, which should fund further research into the causes. The new fitness equipment at the Dillingham Middle and High School gym is in place, and the room is almost ready for student and public use. Principal Bill Schwann has been working for nearly 2 years to see the renovation happen.
We're sure excited for it. I think there's a lot of buzz around town about, you know, when is it going to open? And so I know people are being patient, but we want to make sure it's done right the first time.
The equipment and shipping were covered mostly through donations by several people. And finally, the Alaska Dispatch News is reporting today that Jerry Active of Togiak has been sentenced to 359 years in prison following his conviction on multiple counts of murder and sexual assault. Active attacked an elderly couple and sexually assaulted an infant in Anchorage in 2013, just after he'd been released from prison on other charges. Active claimed his innocence on all charges during Friday's sentencing. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. We'll begin this week's program by catching up on some developments with state legislative business. Joining me to discuss is District 37 Representative Bryce Edgman. Well, Bryce, it's good to have you back on the program. Thanks, as always, for making time.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dave, and I apologize for not being able to be there in person, but great to be able to talk with you again.
It was announced this week that there's a lawsuit coming out of Alaska's legislature. Basically, it seems like suing Governor Walker over the expansion of Medicaid. How do you react to this?
Well, when I heard about it, I didn't like it. and I talked with my staff and made a fairly quick decision to put out a newsletter that sort of laid out a no-holds-barred statement that, number one, I'm in full support of expanding Medicaid, and number two, that I felt that to sue the governor at this point was not the best use of $500,000 and was something that I opposed, and were I a member of the committee, I would have been a no vote on the whole thing.
I believe what they've said is this is a matter of principle on the idea of separation of appropriate powers. Is that important to the legislature to make that stand if they're correct that the issue is there?
Yes, it is to an extent. And I can understand that argument, but I also believe that we've had other instances in the past where similar like lawsuits could have been levied but weren't. And in this instance, I know a great many legislators support Medicaid expansion, but I also know there are those that in the House and the Senate who do not support Medicaid expansion. And so it's really hard to accept the fact that the true underlying motive is the separation of powers. I think there's also a bit of resistance to the Supreme Court's decision and the fact that the governor may have the power to enact or begin the process of accepting Medicaid expansion in a unilateral way without the legislature having to give him the say-so.
Well, speaking of governor's power, it sounds like he may be interested in calling lawmakers back to a special session this fall to deal with some issues related to oil and gas. Is that what you're hearing, and what is this about?
Well, this would be about giving the administration additional authority to enter into longer-term commercial contracts, as well as possibly addressing other issues such as guaranteeing the fiscal terms throughout the life of the gas line project, as well as addressing other issues like the involvement of TransCanada and a few other items that would be part of the entire special session. Now, what I've been hearing is the governor is angling towards the 1st of October. If those negotiations, which are ongoing now between members of his administration and the major oil companies that are involved in the gas line project for the state of Alaska, if those negotiations can be successful, be brought forward to the legislature for ratification, then we would have the grounds for having a special session, which everyone expected to have this fall. But absent those negotiations bearing out, we may not have a special session either.
All right. We'll follow up with you as we see more details on that. Let me ask you about something else that was reported this week, Bryce, which is that S&P, one of the major credit rating agencies, dropped its outlook for Alaska down to negative. And this is certainly not good news, I can't imagine, for anybody. What does this tell you about the state of Alaska's fiscal outlook?
Well, what do we get? The bond rating agencies beginning to put a yellow flag out there basically saying, Alaska, we think your fiscal future is in dire straits, and because of sustained low oil prices and an aversion by the legislature to look at other revenues, you know, we're basically going to lower your credit rating from stable to negative. That, to me, is a very definitive statement that that others outside of those of us in the legislature and, you know, the many people who are now beginning to realize that Alaska's fiscal future is, you know, solely tied to oil revenues, of course, I think everybody knows, but as well, you know, it's finding us in a position where we've got about maybe 3 years of savings left at best, and then we'd have to turn to permanent fund earnings reserve or some other sort of statewide way to raise revenue in order to make our budgets meet. And basically what the message from Standard & Poor's, and by the way, that follows Moody's downgrade, which happened in last December, so you got two of the three major bond raters saying, hey, Alaska, we're getting concerned about your fiscal situation enough to the point where we're not willing to give you a AAA rating like we've always given you over the years, at least the last number of years. That's a pretty strong message to us that we need to take decisive action here in Alaska.
All right, Bryce, something else that's come up in the last couple of weeks as students head back to school here in the region, Both Southwest Region School District and Lakin Peninsula School District have told me that they're watching for potential changes to the school funding quota of 10 students in the class or in the school, perhaps being changed to 25 to be on the receiving end of state funding, which could close several schools in the region. In fact, it was put in very dire terms by Lake and Penn that that could really knock them out. Are you hearing about this? And if so, could this be a reality out of the next legislative session?
I've heard about the concern. I've also looked into whether, in fact, there's a specific bill in place or whether this is maybe being pushed administratively by the Department of Education or, you know, whatever that might be out there. And everything I've heard back indicates to me that this is all just sort of conjecture. It's in the background at this point. But the part that concerns me is that it's plausible that next session or perhaps even beyond that this could be a real effort to help, something I believe is going to happen. That's going to be a statewide effort to consolidate schools and to make schools as cost efficient as possible. So that move to take that floor of 10 and push it up to 25 in terms of the school being able or eligible for K-12 funding could be a reality down the road. And if it happens next session, it's something I'm going to fight against vigorously. And, but I would say just close this in. At this point, I don't know of anything really in the works to make it happen.
Representative Bryce Edgman, thanks as always for joining us here on the program.
Dave, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for a chance to chat today.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Tuesday was the first day of school for students in the 12 schools of the Lake and Peninsula District. It was 13 schools, but Igigik was closed this year after enrollment fell below the 10 students needed for state funding. That closure highlighted the vulnerability of the region's small and remote communities. Some say, as the school goes, so goes the village. But at the far north end of the borough, at the far north end of what the salmon still consider Bristol Bay, one community is not just getting by, it's growing. With roughly 150 residents, Port Allsworth on the edge of Lake Clark exudes a comfortable confidence in its future. Hundreds gathered there Tuesday to celebrate the opening of the new Tenalian School, home to 56 students, 3 preschoolers, and the largest senior class in its history. Selena Allsworth is one of the 6 seniors. She was pulled out of music class to give a tour of the building Tuesday morning.
So the old school used to end about right here, and the original school ended about the end of this library. So it's pretty awesome.
Awesome is an adequate adjective to describe the new Tenalian School, home of the Lynx, which was completed this summer. It took just 2 years from the time Lake and Penn voters approved a $20 million bond package, 15 of which was directed to this school, to see it completed. As we walk past the library and down the school's main hallway, Allsworth notes the open concept of the school's design with lots of windows, high ceilings, and unique classroom walls.
It's interesting. There's glass garage doors, so I don't know if they're going to be distracting yet or if they're going to be helpful, but it's cool being able to see what's going on in other classes too.
Each classroom has a breakout room where a student can work quietly with a tutor or do college correspondence classes. Tenalian is a modern schoolhouse top to bottom with ergonomic chairs, water bottle fillers at the fountains, and smart boards. We pass by a math class and see students drawing on the walls with markers.
And these colored walls are also like a whiteboard wall.
The students at Tenalian have lockers for the first time in their career, have a gym they can serve a volleyball or throw an inbounds pass without stepping over the line or hitting against the wall. They'll be bringing boxes and boxes of books out of storage and putting them in a library that can finally hold them. There's an entryway that can actually house all their winter boots and snowshoes. And there's an obvious enthusiasm in the school about the future.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited. I can't wait for my little sister to grow up in this school and just... She's really lucky, but I definitely will miss the small school aspect.
My name is Sam Blum, and I'm going to be a junior this year.
Blum is also the president of the student council. He tells me how Tenalian students used the community church last year after the old building was knocked down to make room for the new.
We made it work. We didn't know how it'd go at first. It was hard being president when there was no school, but it was good. I think we grew a lot. The whole school grew a lot through it.
If school was tough, sports were tougher. All practice was outside, which got a little dark and chilly come basketball season, and the teams couldn't host any games, so they were always on the road. None did very well last year, but don't bother looking for remorse from the students. They didn't mind their cramped year in the church, and they say the cramped years in the old school actually made them a closer student body in what is already a very tight-knit community. But Principal Nate Davis says the new school was a worthy investment. Tenalian had clearly outgrown itself.
Even though I've only been here 3 years, we've been coming out summer vacationing for 40 years. So we remember when the school was in an old hangar and there's about 10 kids in it. And then in the 80s, they built a school that held about 20 or 30. It had a three-quarter court gym, and it was fun, and it worked for its time and season, and we loved it when it came. And but with 60 kids, it was just, we were already renting other facilities around town, and to see it all come together was just phenomenal.
New schools are not built cheaply. This one cost about $15 million. The borough put a bond measure on the ballot in 2013, asking Lake and Penn voters to approve the total $20 million package to build Tenalian, renovate the New Halen Gym, and make some energy efficiency upgrades elsewhere throughout the district. 318 votes were cast, and 70% of the voters agreed to take on the debt with hopes the state would pay back some percent of it. The borough's first and still mayor, Glenn Allsworth, supported the bond package. The number of voters who did, too, tells him something about how they collectively see what's to come for Lake and Penn, which turned 26 this year.
I think it's the strongest indication if we invest in our young people, that means we have a lot of confidence in our future. And this is just a huge sign of confidence that the voters moved forward with this project. And I think it's going to be a great return.
The Tenalian sports teams may not have had great seasons last year, but their choir never fails to impress. Just before Mayor Allsworth and the state's Education Commissioner Mike Hanley cut the official ribbon, the choir performed the national anthem. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond. Back in a moment.
I got a letterman sweater with the letter in front. I got for football and track. I'm proud to wear it now when I cruise around the other parts of the town. I got my decal and badge. So be true to your school.
Just down the road from the Tenalian School is a lodge, perched just above the shore of one of Lake Clark's many picturesque bays. There are many lodges in Bristol Bay, but this one is unique of them all on account of the guests who come in each week of the summer season.
It's a marriage retreat for wounded veterans and their spouses.
That's Mark Lang, a veteran of the lodge and guided fishing industry in Bristol Bay. In fact, he and his wife Sandy started their careers at this exact lodge back in 1976.
And that was the first year that this fishing lodge opened, so we worked here for 7 years, and then we managed another lodge for 8 years. In 91, we opened our own business. In 2010, we closed it, got a call from Franklin, and asked if we'd be interested in being involved. And we said, well, what is it? Because I really didn't want to take fly-out fishermen anymore. I was kind of like, well, we've done that. We want to kind of move on. And he said, no, it's a marriage retreat for wounded veterans. It's like, oh, awesome.
The Franklin Lang mentioned is Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham, who heads up the evangelical mission organization Samaritan's Purse. Graham's son, Army Captain Edward Graham, was wounded in Iraq during his second tour there. The Grahams began directing more mission efforts to veterans, especially those who had been wounded since 9/11. Several years ago, Samaritan's Purse purchased this Port Allsworth-based lodge, which had fallen into substantial disrepair. It's now been totally renovated to impeccable standards, and since 2012 has hosted 10 couples for each of the 16 weeks of the season. Mark and Sandy Lang say they're delighted to be a part of this ministry for the wounded vets.
In your retirement, you should be doing something that you enjoy, and this is exactly what we enjoy doing. We still put the same amount of energy into it, and every Friday we have a farewell around the fireplace, so then we're able to share, and they share with us what this trip has meant to us, to them. And there's never a dry eye in the whole ceremony. I mean, we just cry together. And the most common comment that people say is that they just feel like they're part of a family that they didn't realize that they had.
Samaritan's Purse covers all costs door to door for all of the guests, and they're treated to a luxurious week in Bristol Bay's backyard. Float planes take them out to fish or shoot photographs. They can kayak Lake Clark and hike the National Park's trails. On Tuesday, just in from a bear viewing excursion, one vet who is missing his right arm from the elbow down sat down with his wife on a deck overlooking the lake. They played guitar and sang songs together until she said the bugs were encouraging her to go inside. The lodge itself has a staff of 40, including a French chef. There's a weight room, a spot to tie flies, even traditional steam baths. And it's all handicap accessible.
People come here and they look outside. It's like, wow, this is so beautiful. You know, it's like, okay, this is creation. How do I connect with that? Or what does that mean? You know, what does that look like? Yeah, it's really a neat program.
It's really a marriage retreat. And the activities, daily get-togethers and counselings, target the marriages that have been stressed by deployments and injuries.
When the spouse goes overseas, is wounded, and they come back, they're not the same person that they were. So the caregiver, which is normally the wife, but not always, we've had several women that were wounded overseas, and the husband's the caregiver. So the caregivers can also basically suffer from almost like a secondary PTSD. So they're the ones taking care of the children at home, paying the bills, paying the mortgage, you know, trying to deal with this. Oh, my husband's now hurt. You know, what do we do with that? And there's so much there. But this intimate setting and the classes they have, and it's really great.
It's an evangelical ministry, but faith isn't a requirement to participate. The lodge has hosted veterans from all branches of service over the past four summers, and Mark and Sandy Lang can tell stories all day about things that happen now that they never would have seen when they ran high-end lodges catering to diehard and usually very wealthy anglers from around the world. Like watching a group of vets carry one of their own who's paralyzed through the water to the float plane. We're getting a wheelchair out to the open tundra so a vet can go along on a bear viewing trip.
Many times these guys won't even leave their homes. We're here, their wives are saying, I can't believe it. He's smiling, he's happy. And the husbands will say the same thing about their wives because they're the caregivers and they have the brunt of all the injuries and, you know, doing all the medical visits and all that. And for many of them, they say that this is the first vacation they've ever had, or like it's like their honeymoon. They never had this type of experience.
The care doesn't end when the week is over. There's an aftercare program with follow-up phone calls and an annual reunion of all those who have come to the lodge in the past. That had been held at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina, but Lang says there are over 600 couples now, and it will be hosted out of a resort in West Virginia. The costs for the veterans of Operation Heal Our Patriots program to attend that annual meeting are covered too. Back in a moment. We've all seen things in our respective hometowns in this region that need fixing. Who among us hasn't thought, if we could just get some people together and maybe a little money or material, I bet we could do that, fix that? Well, as KDLG's Molly Dishner tells us, this week, six guys and a truckload of donated cement made a major fix at Dillingham's animal shelter, and it didn't cost the city a dime.
Last year, two dogs died and another was sent to Anchorage after an outbreak of parvovirus at the animal shelter. Parvo is highly contagious, mostly affects dogs, and can be deadly. The old outdoor pens had dirt floors and couldn't be easily cleaned. So this week, a group of volunteers got together to do something about it, to make the shelter a little better.
Oh, definitely an improvement.
That's Dillingham Animal Control Officer Dan Boyd, who guided the city's move from the old shelter up Lake Road to the location at the harbor, where, hopefully, more people will notice the impounded dogs as they come and go from downtown. That's part of the purpose of the outdoor pens.
Yep, we had them out here, and they were great as they were, but we weren't able to clean and sanitize them like you really should do at an animal shelter, like we can do on the inside. We got a concrete floor in there that I can sanitize, you know, every day, and just make it a clean environment for the animals.
Budgets are tight, so Boyd was thrilled when the volunteer group opted to take on the task. The price tag was basically zero, except for his hours on the clock as a city employee. Boyd estimated it would have cost the city about $4,000 to $5,000.
Everything's been donated volunteer-wise. The lumber, the pegs that hold the forms in place, the wire has all been donated. The help has all been donated. And it's just a really nice thing to have Chris Ming donate the concrete to make this endeavor possible.
The effort was spearheaded by Paul Liedberg, who's retired except for his role as a city councilman. He could have tried to push this project through officially, put it out to bid, see the contract awarded. Instead, he rounded up helping hands and asked around for some cement. And as he and another volunteer nailed a frame together, seemed proud to see it happen.
You know, there's just lots of support for this facility, lots of volunteers that do many things to help the community. And this is just one of them.
Liedberg says about a dozen or more people helped, including folks who gathered supplies and prepped the pen sites, and the guys who showed up for the concrete pour. After a few hours Wednesday, Liedberg says there's not much left to do.
Take the forms off, and then we'll add a little material around the edge of the forms just to slope it, you know, the material being gravel, just like this. And that'll be about it. So in a few days, it should be totally complete.
It may be a simple project, pouring concrete slabs at the dog shelter, and it may go largely unnoticed. The volunteers don't want credit or attention. They do want to see this job done, and maybe set a small example on how to tackle the next ones. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
Thank you for staying with us. Finally today, the east side of Bristol Bay bustles the most in the busy summer season. Yes, there are thousands, probably close to 10,000 fishermen, cannery workers, and the rest who come in through King Salmon to participate in the commercial fishery. But there are thousands more who come in to fish, hunt, and go see those world-famous brown bears at Brooks Falls and Katmai. Most who come to the region fall into pretty distinct categories, either being catered to by the all-inclusive sport fish lodges, or air taxis who buzz them out to Brooks and back in a day. Of course, the commercial fishermen can take care of themselves, but Matt Norman is trying to carve out another niche in this industry. Sitting on the outdoor deck Tuesday evening, steps above the Naknek River with a sow and two cubs rustling the bushes below, I spoke with Norman, who is no newcomer to this area or its annual business.
I started here in 1986 as a fishing guide with Mark Emery, and then I was partners in the King Cove for about 10 years, from 90 to 2000. And been doing other various projects on the West Coast. But when this lodge was empty for about 3 years and boarded up, and it just looked like a real, had like a lot of potential for what King Salmon could use.
The lodge is the King Salmon Lodge, where he's general manager along with his wife, Sandy. What the area could use Norman's banking on is a nice place to stay, eat, and drink to get out into the area for a variety of reasons, paying at a nightly rate.
High-end lodging for people going to Katmai, but we also set up guided fishing out of the lodge, and with that we use local guides. And we're also doing cooking classes this year with Chef Keller from Napa. And we're also focusing on photography with Mark Emery, who is one of the great local talents.
And so far, it's working. Tapping into a little of the various markets, the sport fishing, the bear viewing, hosting the corporate executives for the commercial canneries, more of whom show up during the season than Norman suspects the region knows about, plus hosting conferences like the upcoming meeting of all school superintendents in the state, have kept the King Salmon Lodge, so far, profitable.
It takes several things to make something work out here. So if we rely just on sport fishing alone and try to establish that business in 3 years, would have been tough. But to dabble in the sport fishing, dabble in the dining, and then, you know, and if we're lucky enough to pick up a contract here and there, like anybody out in the rural Alaska is, that's, you know, frosting on the cake. And it takes all three pieces of that to make this property work.
This week, the King Salmon Lodge is hosting a group of nearly 20 from the San Francisco Bay Area. They're doing a little fishing and sightseeing, but Norman says the reasons the wives agreed to go along with the trip to King Salmon was on account of the lodge's chef, Joseph Keller. He's the brother of Chef Thomas Keller, who is arguably one of America's best and best-known chefs. Together, the Kellers run several famous restaurants such as Bouchon and the French Laundry. The party from the Bay Area say there's a year-long wait list to get a table at French Laundry, so they opted to follow Chef Keller on his summer respite, where he agreed to teach cooking classes for the week they were in town. Chef Keller tells me he now looks forward to coming to his annual working vacation in King Salmon.
A little bit less in the limelight and out-of-the-way places. The lodge is a nice lodge. On the river, so, you know, I mean, I don't think you can get a better setting for someone like me to present some, you know, some easy, simple, great food. And the people have been great, appreciative of it.
Of course, Chef Keller says part of the joy for him is getting to put fresh, wild Alaska salmon on the menu. In fact, he says he tries to put it on the table within hours of the fish coming out of the river. Keller says that's a luxury few, if any, in the lower 48 get the chance to indulge. He says he's been a little surprised with what's proven to be the most popular way he serves it.
It's doing the crispy skin salmon. It seems to have hit a chord with everybody that's come in. And it's the way it's cooked, the skin comes out to be like a potato chip. And then you've got that beautiful king salmon meat. And when you get that crunchy and that just flaky, creamy, it's absolutely wonderful. And we do it with a citrus bergamote, which is a kind of a citrus butter, if you will, light citrus butter. The people have flipped out over it.
Yes, a lodge like the King Salmon is good for local coffers. It brings in business and bed taxes and is building on the types and maybe numbers of tourists coming through the area. But there's another local advantage. The restaurant and well-stocked bar and a scenic setting over the river are open to anyone every night of the week. Open May through the end of September has become yet another dining option for the Naknek King Salmon residents, and Matt Norman says he and Chef Keller work to keep the menu appealing to them.
And the ribs and the chicken parms, things like that, we have to have that. The smoked Gouda mac and cheese, those are all comfort food and priced in a nice price range where, you know, most people can afford it pretty much within reason. And that's the market in the spring and the fall. So you have to cater to the local market.
Norman and his wife are now in their third year running the lodge. They hope to show that there are more people in the country, in the world, who want better options for traveling to and around Bristol Bay. How to keep finding more of them, he says, is their annual challenge.
It really is a conundrum at the end of the season. Say, where should we? We've got a couple thousand bucks to throw at a marketing idea. What should we do with it? You know, get a food article out of the Bay Area that featuring our chef, or should we advertise in a German bear magazine? Should we, you know, advertise in the Anchorage Daily News? I don't know.
He says the biggest challenge they're up against is that it's still cheaper for a person in Anchorage to get to Maui than it is to get to King Salmon. And that's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Find out more about this program and find past episodes at our website, kdlg.org, which is undergoing some maintenance at the moment. Send your feedback to me at dave@kdlg.org. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. We'll see you back here next week. Thank you.
Thank you.